During Robert Brogdon's Olathe Buick GMC clearance event, save up to 20% on new models like the 2023 Buick Encore GX or GMC Sierra 1500. View their huge inventory at robertbrogdon.com and find your perfect match.
It's time for our next guest on the Border Patrol. It says it on this sheet, and I'll do that right now. My eyes see C.J. Moore. C.J. Moore?
I bet he's so confused right now.
I watch the Oscars.
There he is.
Do you think Al Pacino did the best job ever of delivering an award?
Yeah, obviously.
Right. That's exactly right.
Obviously.
Correct answer.
And I have to go to the envelope for that. And I will. Here it comes. And my eyes see Oppenheimer. Yes.
Yes. Thank you, Al.
I've got to pick the bracket next Sunday, and I think when I write it out and I describe my picks, I'll just, instead of saying why I picked what, I'll just say my eyes see,
right,
and then say my pick.
Please, you know? Do. That would be very enjoyable for everyone. Well, we an interesting weekend in college basketball. So let's start with the good news for the local teams. K-State needed a win against Iowa State, and they got it. And so now that they have the win, it's not a hypothetical. First, you can just tell me how big that win was, what you thought of the performance. But now, what do they have to do in Kansas City now that they got that win over Iowa State?
Well, I think they still got quite a bit of work to do. I think, you know, obviously they'd have to beat Texas. I think they'd have to beat Iowa State. Then they're maybe in the conversation. But I think they probably got to get to the championship game to get there. But if they win those first two, I think they got a shot. I was looking at – I don't usually look at a lot of bracketology stuff because I hate it. But I was looking this morning, and I can't remember if it was my guy Brian Bennett or maybe at CBS. I think they're in about like the last eight. They're in like that four. They're in like that 5 to 8 range as far as the last teams not to make it. So they are on the bubble. They got a chance, but I still think they need a couple more wins, at least.
Okay, before we get into another Big 12 stuff, I want to hit on another couple topics so we don't run out of time and miss them. You had a tweet yesterday. Hopefully, most people paid attention to it. If you're not watching the Valley Championship, what are you doing? Indiana State down 16 just a couple minutes ago, now headed to the line to take the lead. Drake had a huge lead, then they blew it, but then they finished strong, and they beat Indiana State. And that was a hell of a game. And so now Drake obviously is in the tournament. And, man, I didn't realize, you know, you saw the coach and his son, who's the star player. They were in tears and everything. Then I find out the story that the coach's nephew and, of course, had passed away a few months ago at 19 years old and, you know, was always there at the games. And so it was an emotional victory for them. And so congratulations to Drake. But Indiana State is a team we've talked about, and everyone loved, you know, the big kid that wears the goggles, Avila, who's a darling of college basketball. We all want to see him in the tournament. You wrote about the coach, but now maybe they're not going to get in. They got to get in, right? I guess they don't have to, but should they be in? How nervous would you be this week if you're Indiana State?
I would be nervous, but I did, you know, like I said, they're basically the main reason I looked at the bracketology stuff this morning. I wanted to see, you know, what people are doing with them. Lenardi, my guy Brian Bennett, and Jerry Palm all had them in. I think Brian and Lenardi both have them in the playing in the first four game. But I think they'll get in. I hope they get in. Like, I think they're, you know, maybe one of the top 25 teams in college basketball. Like, they're right there for me. Offensively, they're really, really good. I mean, I think Drake and Indiana State could both win a game or two in the NCAA tournament. Like, I think both those teams are really, really good. I mean, Drake, Darren DeVries, if you watched it yesterday, or sorry, not Darren, Darren's a coach, Tucker, is an awesome mid-range player. Like, he is one of the hardest scorers to stop in the country, got good size, this is a feathery touch. He was a matchup problem for Indiana State, and Drake got him 2 out of 3 games this year. And, I mean, he was a big reason why. And they did a good job. You know, Indiana State, when they're making threes, they can beat just about anybody, but they do rely a lot on the three ball, and they struggled shooting it for a while yesterday. But you saw, it was actually down 18. I was wrong. It was down 18, not down 16. Down 18 to up one in like the matter of 6 minutes. Like, they can just catch fire and go on crazy runs. So I think they're a team that, like, people just love watching the NCAA tournament. So I hope to get in.
That was a hell of a basketball game. That got me fired up for March Madness. That was a wonderful game with tremendous emotion on both sides. Tears on both benches after the game. And so I would look forward to watching both teams, and I'm going to take your cue. I will pick each team to win a game or two in my bracket, which means that they will be ousted in the first round. So maybe I shouldn't pick them. Yeah. Nate Bucati.
Fade us.
Right.
Fade
us, sure. Well, I told you the first time I saw Avila play, I was like, well, that's the kind of guy that beats Kansas in the NCAA tournament and becomes, you know, nationally famous. That doesn't seem so far-fetched right now, CJ, considering everything that is going on with KU. And it's a man, it is man bites dog with KU this season. I mean, for them to be 10-8 in the Big 12, what your reaction? I mean, what do you make of that?
I mean, I think it's disappointing just in the fact that this is a team that was preseason number one, and so there were big expectations around them, and you know, they for the most part played to that or played closer to it in the non-conference, but you know, it's been Bill Self's worst conference season ever, and I think it speaks to, like, his ridiculous crazy run of a career, where, you know, he always finishes, I think this, I remember the stat was, isn't it, he finishes like top three in his league every single year, or top two, something like that, until this season, right? Like, they're always really, really high. So, you know, but they're still going to, you look at the bracketology this morning, they're still going to be either a 3 or a 4, it's looking like. While it's bad in, when you look at it through a KU lens, you know, still a lot of people would like to have that season. But I think it was just, when you, like, put a bow on this at the end of it, I think you'll go back to looking at, one, the Artarian Morris recruitment was a bad idea. And I think put them a player behind, like, they could use a guard that can get downhill, that can score the basketball, that can shoot a three behind a ball screen. Like, I only watched about the first maybe 18 minutes or so of that game. I took my boys to the state tournament this weekend and watched my alma mater, my son's high school, Shiner Northwest, win the state title. Shout out to the Cougars. So we were at Topgolf and had the game on, and man, I tuned out after about 18 minutes because there wasn't much to watch. But DeJuan Harris, you know, dribbling behind ball screens and not being willing to take those shots when they're just sagging off of them. Nobody being able to make a three. Like, they just need another guard that can actually create off the bounce and make some shots. And it's really, really shown here in the last few weeks because, you know, all those losses, BYU, Baylor, and Houston, like, they're just games where nobody can make a shot.
An amazing season for the Cougars, by the way. My nephew, Callen, was a really good player on the Shawnee Mission South team that lost to them in the playoffs and in the regular season. Undefeated, right, for Northwest?
Yeah, undefeated.
Unbelievable.
First state title in the school history.
Congratulations, cool. Man. That's awesome. And congratulations to all those kids. But as for KU, I mentioned this earlier on the show today, CJ, when I was watching the game, Fran Fraschilla said this, and I think he's echoing what Bill Self has said either publicly or at least I know he said it to multiple people. You know, this is never going to happen again. What happened to KU this year will never happen again under my watch. And on the one hand, you look at it and say, well, it never has happened, you know, the whole time he's been at KU, which is a long time now. But the landscape is so different in college basketball now. Is it as simple as Bill Self can just vow this is never going to happen again? Like, what has to be different to make sure for, you know, like, I guess what's your reaction to him stating that so clearly, like, this won't happen again at Kansas?
No, I don't think he's ever going to have a depth issue like this again. I think he's going to try like hell to make sure that's the case. And, I mean, like you look at the way this roster is put together, they lost all the bigs because Hunter Dickinson came in, and then it was hard to recruit, you know, behind him to bring in another guy, because who wants to come in and sit on the bench behind a guy that's probably going to get a majority of the minutes? And, you know, that's why, you know, Parker Brown was like a unique situation, being the brother of Christian and you know, the history of that family. Like, that was basically probably like the only center they could have gotten to come in and back up Hunter. And then, you know, they were limited. Basically, like, they needed to hit on at least one of the guards out of the transfer portal. And, you know, kind of 0-for-2, I think, when you look at what Nick Timberlake's been. And then, obviously, Arterio Morris was a character, you know, 50-50 guy you weren't sure about there. I think a lot of people were probably scared to recruit him for good reason, and that didn't work out very well. So, but as Bill Self, you know, saying, like, I think in the portal you have opportunities to build your depth and make sure you got the plenty of guys. So, but the challenge is when you get some of the top guys, some other players that, you know, you might be able to get in to recruit to come off your bench, like, they're hesitant because, you know, am I going to be able to play behind Juwan Harris? Am I going to be able to, or am I going to get minutes when KJ Adams is at the floor? So it's kind of a delicate, you know, to walk that line and try to build depth, but also, you know, get the big time starters. I think KU was in a interesting position there, but I'm sure he'll be aggressive in building depth.
Well, so we had this argument earlier, Jake and I, a little bit about what is KU if Dickinson and Kevin McCullough are not available, which is a possibility. Bill Self has basically made it seem like that both guys, their future the rest of the season is uncertain. They have to play Cincinnati or West Virginia in their first game of the Big 12 tournament without either of those guys. Are they favorites to win that game, or are they underdogs?
I would probably make them underdogs. I'll be interested to see what Vegas does, but
right.
I would think it'd be probably about a pick 'em in Vegas. But I would, if I'm handicapping that game, Cincinnati, I'm guessing Cincinnati gets through, and Cincinnati's probably like at least a 3-point favorite in my opinion.
I mean, that's wild, isn't it? I mean, but those are their two cornerstone guys this year.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think
any two best players off any roster, you know, it's going to be tough, but especially with KU's depth problem.
Yeah, I think that we used to, in the past, you could take the two best players off KU's roster and still be like, yeah, they still have the better starting five out there. But that's not really the case this year, I guess, is the point that we started with here. So, I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see what happens in the tournament.
All right. Let's talk a little bit more about the Big 12 tournament and matchups that we know. The first round will feature the 13-12 matchup. And remember, this schedule is all different than what you used to. It starts on Tuesday, 11:30 a.m. is Oklahoma State and UCF. Then at 2 o'clock is that West Virginia-Cincinnati game with the winner advancing to play Kansas. So let's go to Wednesday. Oklahoma State-UCF winner will play BYU. But then we have Oklahoma-TCU. And so where are these two teams in relation to making the NCAA tournament, and how important is this game for each?
I think they're both in a decent spot right now, but I think this is like a win and get off the bubble scenario for these teams. Whoever wins it is probably safe. The other team will probably get in, but like might have to sweat it a little bit. You know, you other things could happen. Other teams could go on runs where it knocks off a bubble spot. So, I think that's a win and definitely get in. The other team, you know, maybe sweat it a little bit.
Important game. Then the winner will advance to take on Houston. Okay, so then the other matchup that we know about, and at least for our purposes, it's as nice of a marquee matchup that you could hope for on a Wednesday. K-State and Texas. And you've already said that K-State, coming off that win against Iowa State, needs to win a couple of games to feel good about their chances. What about this matchup that we'll get to see K-State and Texas?
Yeah, it's a desperation game for Kansas State. I mean, they should be Texas is you know in no problem. I think it looks like, but K-State, I think it'll be, I would guess, a low-scoring game. You know, the last time they played Texas, it was 62-56. I'm guessing it's something like that. You know, I think K-State needs to get Tyler Perry going a little bit. He's been struggling shooting the ball here these last few games. And you know, that Tyler Perry, here when we were sitting here in April, May last year, two of the most coveted guards out of the transfer portal were Max A. Smith and Tyler Perry. So, you know, I could see that game maybe coming down to one of those two guys, like which one is hot in that one.
All right. Also, we know about the awards that have been given out. And look, Houston, you know, sweeps the big ones. You've got Kelvin Sampson winning Coach of the Year, and who could argue? And you've also got Jamal Shedd winning Player of the Year and Defensive Player of the Year. And so, for you know, and look, there's people that haven't watched a whole lot of Houston that aren't hardcore fans, but are going to get a chance to go out and maybe see him in the Big 12 tournament. You got a guy that just won Player of the Year and Defensive Player of the Year. Tell us, you know, what makes him so special. Because he'll be one of the stars that'll be showcased here in the Big 12 tournament this week.
I love Jamal. I've actually, you know, I've spent a lot of time around that Houston program through the years, and I usually make a trip down there every year. I haven't this year, but I think he's one of the best leaders in college basketball. Like, you sit down with that young man, and like, you just you start talking to him, you can feel like there's something special about this guy. And, I mean, he is built like a brick house. Like, it is not fun to be guarded against him. You know, he gets a lot of block shots for like a tiny guard, for a small guard, gets a lot of steals. So the defensive award is well earned. He's had the challenge for him this year is like, he is naturally a pass first guy, a guy that wants to get other people involved. And they've asked him, they told him, hey, you need to shoot more this year. And they actually changed their offense up. They adopted kind of, they're running a lot of the Marquette stuff this year. A lot of like ball screens, step up screens along the side of the floor. And they did, you know, it's helped him kind of get downhill and be a little more aggressive shooting the ball. So that's why his scoring numbers are up this year. And, man, he's had a terrific season. He's not the most efficient. But he can have some huge scoring games, and he's still a great assist guy, and he's one of the best defensive guards in the country, no doubt.
And Kelvin Sampson winning Coach of the Year, and that was, I mean, why wouldn't he? But, I mean, Kelvin Sampson, we remember him and the success he had with Oklahoma in the early years of the Big 12. And, I remember going to, seemed like a couple of years in a row when Quinn Snyder was a coach, they'd have to go up against Oklahoma in that 8:30 game, and Oklahoma was always so tough defensively and would grind it out and just end up, you know, kind of beating you up and ultimately just wearing you out over the course of the game. And here is Kelvin Sampson back again in the Big 12, and it felt like there were some people going into the season like, yeah, he's had success at Houston, but now coming to the Big 12 and the grinder that the Big 12 is, we'll see what Houston really is.
Yeah.
Well, boy, did they pass that with flying colors. What can you say about the job that he's done at Houston and what he has now in this opportunity to come in and win this tournament and maybe go on and hell, maybe win a national championship?
Yeah, I mean, he's done an unbelievable job. I mean, that was such a bad job when he took it over. Like, they had been bad for so many years. And to turn that program into what he's turned it into is you know, one of the most incredible jobs anybody's done in college basketball, like, ever. And, I mean, he is a really, really good ball coach. Like, he makes the complex, when he, like, his practices, he makes the complex seem simple. And, I mean, they have an identity. They are going to guard you. They are going to play their balls off. And they are going to rebound on the offensive glass. Like, they're not the greatest shooting team, but they get so many offensive rebounds back, and they, you know, they turn you over so much and limit their turnovers that they just get a lot more shots than you do. So his methods work. He learned, you know, he went into the NBA for some years while he, after Indiana happened, and I think he evolved as a coach there and kind of embraced some of the modern, you know, maybe shooting threes a little bit more. Pace and space type stuff, but also, you know, it comes back, it always comes down to, like, his teams are always going to play hard, just like his Oklahoma teams did. And it's pretty incredible to come in this league and win it in the first year at a school like Houston that, you know, here 10, 15 years ago, like, that was a school that was just losing a ton every single season.
And win it by a couple of games. I'm going to be honest with you. Thank you, CJ. Nate was just kind of... it seemed like he was fading during this segment, and when you say they're going to play their balls off, that woke him up.
Got my attention.
Got him re-engaged into the segment, so I appreciate that. I also saw that you tweeted that you watched Northwest Missouri State and Ben McCollum punch their ticket for an 11th straight NCAA tournament. All he does is win, 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 no matter what. Will this be the offseason? Should Northwest Missouri's, and look, if he does move on, Northwest Missouri State should wish him well and thank him for being unbelievable for the stretch that he's been their coach. But is this, do you think we're getting close to the time where he takes on a Division I program?
Yeah, I think this will be the offseason. We'll see. But Missouri State, you know, if any of your fans are listening, you should be pushing like heck to get Ben McCollum. I think that's a, you know, that's a job that I think would probably interest him. And, you know, the Missouri Valley is one of the best mid-major leagues. You know, anybody that watched that game yesterday saw it was some pretty high-level basketball. And I think, you know, any Valley job, most Valley jobs, I think would be, like, a good fit for him. You know, Drake could come open if Darren DeVries gets an offer somewhere, and I think he's a candidate for some bigger jobs. So, Drake, Missouri State, I could see one of those. You know, Ben's from Iowa. He's a Midwestern guy. You know, last year Buffalo tried to get him, but I think he's a Midwestern guy and would like to stick in this area. So I could see, you know, one of those schools being a fit, and we'll see here. But, you know, another incredible job he's done with Northwest Missouri, just to win year after year after year, no matter the kind of, like Kansas, you know, the faces change, the expectations don't, and the guy just keeps winning.
You talk about guys that keep winning. You mentioned DeVries, and that's where we started this segment, basically. I mean, 28 wins this year, 27 wins last year, back-to-back appearances now in the NCAA tournament. At Drake, he's 150-54 with a conference record of 78-33. Do you anticipate him jumping to a bigger job? Because, I mean, whenever I watch that team and watching him, but I like the way they play. I like the way he coaches. I think he'd be a really interesting name for a lot of places.
Yeah, if his son doesn't go to the NBA, you've got one of the best players in college basketball on your team. You're getting him with you, so that's a nice perk. Yeah, St. Louis, you know, is possibly going to come open here, and that's, I think him, I think Josh Schertz from Indiana State. I've heard some Chris Mack, former Louisville coach. I would anticipate, you know, one of those guys being in the mix there. Heck, if I was them, I'd look at Ben as well. Like, I think he could make the jump to an A-10 job as well. But that could be something that, you know, or, you know, the West Virginia even. Darren DeVries could be a candidate there maybe. So we'll see. But I do think that he's a guy, you know, the burn on him has been, like, he doesn't interview well, but, man, the guy wins a lot of games, and he's a pretty darn good coach. So I think this is the year where he might make a leap up to a bigger job as well.
Yeah, it seems like he coaches pretty well, so maybe that should be the deciding factor, huh?
You would think so, yeah.
Hey, CJ, thanks so much for the time. We appreciate it, and we look forward to talking to you about everything that happens over the next several weeks.
All right, thanks, guys.
CJ Moore from The Athletic. You don't have to be so frowny about college basketball. You know, I get it. It's what you're used to, you know.
Yeah.
You're very elitist when it comes to college basketball.
Very spoiled.
I know, very spoiled.
Very spoiled.
Spoiled rotten, you know. You don't like the taste of your milk this March, but just have fun.
Yeah, no.
There's no pressure on you. How about just have fun? Can you do that? You were very frowny during that segment. But then you heard that.
Well, then
you heard a team was going to play their balls off. And
this is a rare occurrence where I am not happy to have somebody say that my opinion was correct over Jake's.
Well,
usually I would strut around and gloat and all that stuff.
Yeah, well, isn't that what you're doing right now?
He agreed with you. He didn't say it was correct.
Okay, if he wasn't, he's kind of happy because he's bringing it up again.
Of course he is.
If he really wasn't happy about it, he wouldn't have said that again.
You
but
be
he did want to.
When that
you know,
actually happens,
he had no problem waving the banner just now, did he?
No, that's what he does.
I'm just saying, in an expert like CJ,
we get it.
That's
we
all.
Heard it. We just heard it.
Yeah.
Usually we recap stuff later. You don't have to repeat.
It's not a time that makes me happy because
it's
bad news.
Yeah, it kind of did a little bit.
It
makes me feel
down here.
It cheers me up a little bit.
Right. It kind of did. You're saying it doesn't make me happy, but it kind of
does. Because Jake was pretty aggressive, you know. You think that? You think, you know, like I'm a big idiot.
I don't see him backing off, though.
I'm not.
Have you ever seen Jake back off?
Well, 2014 World Series, yes.
Well,
yes.
He backed out of that suite real quick.
Back out of here.
Yeah.
Stay right here, Jake.
Yeah.
Do not.
And
move.
There Jake backs off.
Beat Gonzalez.
That was a different kind of backing.
Exactly.
Off.
Back after this on WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. All right, so we're going to have some fun here. This, told you earlier, we're going to talk about a new show that starts streaming today, the McBee Dynasty, Real American Cowboys. And you can watch it on Peacock as of right now. And then episodes are also going to air on USA Network starting tonight at 10 p.m. and then air weekly. But so that's why if you can't control yourself like me and you don't want to binge everything like in 1 or 2 days and try to, you know what, make it last longer, you can watch it on USA Network. But 10 episodes available on Peacock as of now. And we have one of the stars of the show here with us, Stephen McBee Jr. Stephen, again, with the V, because we know how to spell Stephen correctly. Stephen, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I appreciate you guys having me on. I'm doing well.
It's so nice. You brought us McBee Farm flasks with Sports Radio 18. What have you heard about us? Because this is very, very, very thoughtful and very applicable for our lives.
No, I've always been a fan of you guys. I grew up playing football there at Port Osage, so I'm familiar with you guys and have been for years.
Right on. Yeah. So let's get into this. And so, you know, we were talking about how this show's been marketed, and then you said something to me in the commercial break that resonated with me. Jake, you're going to love this. You said the goal was for it to kind of be a cross between Yellowstone and Succession. You don't need to say anything else because that's two of our favorite shows. I love Succession. I love Yellowstone. Watched every episode of both of them, and so is Jake. So, Jake, that seems like that's got you on board immediately.
Yeah, that's an easy sell.
And both of those shows are mentioned. So, for someone that hasn't seen the write-up and seen the trailer, which the trailer looks fantastic just by itself, how would you explain what the show is going to be about and what they're going to get when they watch it on Peacock?
Yeah, like you said, it's Yellowstone meets Succession, which means that we're one of the largest family-owned farming and ranching operations in the country, and every single day is a battle in the farming industry. You know, for the last three decades, we've just been getting pounded, you know, trying to make our industry work and trying to make it profitable, and here we are trying to grow it into one of the largest, if not the largest, privately owned one in the country, and throw that in with a bunch of love life drama and all the other business ventures we have going on, including the car washes here and around Kansas City. And it's a it's a pretty entertaining show to watch.
And so I'm and you, in Gallatin is where you're from, and one of my best friends ever, Craig Cummings, who's now a local KCMO firefighter and one of the best boxers in Kansas City history. He's from Gallatin. He's one of the, he's Mr. Gallatin for a long time, and his family still is from, lives up there. And so I'm familiar with the. And I lived in St. Joe for a couple of years. And so for people that don't know, where's Gallatin? Let people know because you're right close to us.
Yeah, Gallatin is right up I-35. It's about an hour 15 minutes out of Kansas City.
Right. And so I was watching the trailer, and it looks. Where was it? Were there people heckling you guys?
Yeah. We were up at a dirt track up there at just north of Gallatin, just north of Lake Viking, and decided to go out one night for a dirt track race. And, anytime we go out in the public scene up there, we're big fish in a smaller pond.
Right.
And you have some criticism.
And so, that's part of the dynamic of the show. Nate Bucati, I know you're a man that lived in Moberly, Missouri for a while. But, and so we're all going to watch this as a show. As a family to watch this, and we talk about on the show.
So for one thing I do have to ask you, because full disclosure, I am a rep for Greengrass Cattle Company. Are they rivals with you guys at all? Are you guys far enough away from each other that you don't cross, I don't want to get myself in trouble here.
Get them in
like
trouble.
No, for us, we're on a global scale whenever we're in the farming and ranching industry. So neighbors nearby, I guess you could call them competitors. We don't view them like that. Yeah. Pretty much we're all friends trying to make it work in this hard, tough industry.
So I spent some time cattle ranching as a kid in Ark City, a very limited amount of time. My stepdad is a farmer in southern Kansas.
When you see him, do you think cattle rancher? Is that the first thing that popped into your head?
Yeah. I'd say that was my first or second thought. Yeah.
A lot of people feel that way.
A professional model.
You could have done that.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
But you could have done a reality show on that, because I was a kid that had grown up in Kansas City with zero rural experience whatsoever. And then all of a sudden in sixth grade, I'm living on a farm, and they put you to work right away when you're living on a farm. But at that time, my stepdad had cattle as a part of his business, and he quickly had gotten out of it. He only did that for a couple of years while I was there, because he was like, it's too hard. The cattle ranching part is too hard to be successful and to maintain. And he was doing a lot of crop, wheat and grain sorghum and things like that. So he got out of it. Mm-hmm. Why is that such a difficult gig?
Well, I think one of the toughest things about it is that it doesn't matter how you're feeling, what's going on with your personal life. You could have the biggest dinner planned for 8 p.m. on a Friday night. And if a mama starts calving and she's having issues, you have to put all of your plans aside, because the responsibility to take care of those animals and that farm comes first and foremost before anything else.
And you can't rely on somebody else to do it for you.
You can't. I mean, you just want to, you feel for these animals like they're part of your family. It's not just a number on a spreadsheet when you're a small town farmer and a rancher. And so these animals actually become family members to you, and you feel such a duty and obligation to take care of them.
Okay, so I just be honest with you, one of the reasons why I love Yellowstone so much is because of Rip.
Uh-huh.
And if anyone says they don't love Yellowstone because of Rip, they're lying to you. Because I know someone's getting an ass whipping when he comes on camera. Who's the Rip of the show? Is there any ass whippings going to be handed out this season?
There may be a few. My brother Jesse is a spitting image of Casey Dutton. Hair and everything.
Yep,
doppelganger. My brother Cole would be more of like a Beth, in that he's a wild child, kind of a wildcat.
How does he feel about that comparison?
He's all right with it. I think I'm the most upset about who I'm getting compared to on the media side of things. They keep calling me Jamie Dutton, and I'm so mad about that, because I usually work in the office, and, I'm dressed usually nicer, and so they call me the nerd, the Jamie Dutton of the family, and I'm like, all right, that's cool.
Right. So, great portrayal, great acting of in that role. But you shy away from the comparison to Jamie Dutton.
Yeah, I'm a little offended. I like to think I can still get my hands dirty every now and then, and they like to make fun of me because they say I only know how to punch buttons on a computer.
But
somebody's got to do that, right?
Someone's got to do it. At an operation of our size, it doesn't work to just sit in a tractor cab all day or sit in a horse saddle for 8 hours a day. There's no way to make it run.
And so, I was watching the trailer, and you're the guy that's most equipped to take things over, and has got the head for business and everything, like you said. And so then Cole, it does show him partying a lot. I didn't think Beth, but we'll call him the Beth of this thing. And then Jesse, the pretty boy. So, mm-hmm. But and then you got Braden, who was raised by his mom, who's kind of from the outsider coming in, mm-hmm. right? So there's an interesting dynamic there as well.
Yeah.
Do you guys all get along?
Yeah, we're as close as you can be as brothers, but in saying that, we're also hyper-competitive. We grew up playing sports, and really, we all have different personalities, and I think that's what makes this show so interesting is, you know, whoever ends up taking over the farm, we all four have different visions for the direction of the farm. So depending on who ends up taking it over is the direction the farm's going to go, and it could go in any one of four ways.
So one other thing we have in common, so you're Steven,
mm-hmm.
Your dad's Steve, my dad is Steve.
Okay.
And my dad has lived a very colorful life and has done things that I will never follow in his footsteps.
Like Janis Joplin.
Well, there you go. But for your dad, it seems like, you know, there's one scene of him, he's, you know, he's in bed, and there's a woman getting dressed. I mean, the way they're playing this, and not far from the Kevin Costner, right? So how would you describe your dad in this process of him trying to decide who's going to follow in my footsteps? Because that's not an easy decision.
It's not. It's not as easy as just saying, well, Steven's better equipped behind the computer, because at the end of the day, Cole knows how to run the equipment in the field better than I do, way better than I ever could. And, you know, there's a lot of things that I have my faults as far as the business goes. And so I think it's a tough decision for my dad, along with the fact that, you know, his personal life is also a little bit of a train wreck. And so he's got this compounding factor of not only trying to weigh the business decision at mine, but also trying to keep his personal lives somewhat intact. And it's just a interesting concoction of blends of personal life drama and the farming and stresses and pressures that come along with it.
Okay, so you're no stranger to reality television because you were on Joe Millionaire.
Correct.
And so was that, was that a positive experience?
I enjoyed it, and I'm still with the girl from Joe Millionaire. She's actually on every episode of this new show.
Well, there it is. Look, Jake's enamored with that right now.
Yeah.
He's very excited by that.
Yeah, they say you can't find love on reality TV, and I'm the you know, shining example of that.
Well, they also say you're not supposed to meet your partner at a bar.
Well, I did too.
Yeah,
the studio audience loves it.
You know?
But so, and then you have this. I mean, when I see this, I mean, I think like in my life, boy, I don't need any cameras around me ever, right? Mm-hmm. How often were the cameras around you for this? How much of a nuisance was it? Do you think about it? Does it get to the point where it's just second nature? Because that's got to be a difficult experience to get used to.
For 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, for 4 months straight, these cameras were in and all around us, including our bedrooms, including every single personal facet of our lives. They were around us. But going into the show, we had meetings as a family, and we were talking to the production company, and they said, hey, we did the first 10 seasons of The Kardashians. The reason why that show was so successful is because they opened up 99% of their lives, the good and the bad, to us. And that's what the audience wants, is to be able to really feel like they know who you are as people, not just some facade that you put on for camera. And so we said, all right, the Kardashians did 99%. We're going to give them 100%. There's not one single thing we're going to hide. Every single bad business deal, every single fight argument we have, we're going to showcase it to the world.
All right. So here's a sentence from the Peacock website. In addition to the relationship with Steve McBee and his four boys, audiences will also witness the sons in romantic relationships with longtime girlfriends who are growing impatient, waiting for the boys to commit. And so, but with the cameras there, does that put even more pressure? How did that change
Absolutely.
The dynamic in your relationship?
Absolutely. For me, Callie and I have had an on and off relationship since Joe Millionaire. Been going steady now here for a little over a year, but my brother Jesse has been with his girlfriend for 10 years. And she was wanting to get a ring put on about 2 years into the relationship. So when you talk about some added pressure from my brother Jesse, especially throwing cameras into the mix, that was some serious pressure he was dealing with.
10 years.
He hit the decade mark.
Well, I don't know if we could talk about this, and maybe just maybe not if you want to. Jake wants to know if there's a train station involved in this.
Contrary to social media belief in the area, there is not a train station on the farm. You won't find anything out across the land.
Jake, yeah, any follow-ups on that? Because that's that's what he's hoping
that's
for.
That's the right answer, but
right.
I mean, is it the correct answer?
Yeah, that's
true.
We don't know.
I guess we'll never know.
So,
was there anything that happened in the 4 months that was, it was like, oh, God, I hope this doesn't end up being part of an episode? Like, were there?
Yeah, every single one of us can honestly say there was at least one, and actually multiple times throughout the season where we're like, did we just do that? And that night we'd lay in bed and think, yeah, the world's going to see that. They're going to see what I said or what I did, and that's not good. And I think you'll see very quickly in episode one or two, my brother Cole has a few of those moments.
So how do you – so they're there for 4 months, 24-7. And then do you just leave it up to them for the editing to put it together? Do you get have any say? Do you, like, the 10 episodes are there? Have you seen them all? Like, how, what's that process like? When are you gonna, I mean, what's
to tell you how dramatic this show is, the producers flew out and they wanted to do a watch party where we got to watch all the episodes. We got through the first five. And we had like four major meltdowns, storming out of the house, girlfriends going different directions, guys yelling at each other. And the producers were like, all right, tension's high enough in the room. We're not going to get to the last five episodes. So we have not seen them yet.
Oh, wow. So how do you plan on watching them?
We don't know yet. We're thinking about having a watch party with everyone involved and then having some cameras in the room for the fallout. But we're flying all across the country for different press stuff. So I don't know if we'll be able to get together to watch it.
Who do you think... Who do you think would be the toughest for the last five episodes that maybe doesn't want to watch that?
Like, my dad and Cole are going to have a tough time.
Right.
Yeah, they're both one and the same personality types, and they don't know a stranger. And whenever they go out to the bar, they have a good time. And I think that there's going to be some scenes that they may wince at whenever it comes across.
Your brother Cole can party then. It seemed like the trailer played it up like that. I mean,
he's every bit of the party and then some. He is the personality for all of us.
What's the bar scene like in Gallatin?
There is one little watering hole, and it's about 10 yards long with a couple pool tables, and that's about it. And my brother Cole is there two, three nights a week.
So he's well known there.
He's well known there. Yeah, he's a staple.
So what's your schedule? You said you have to travel all around. So what's your schedule like to promote the new show?
Yeah, flying to New York today, from New York directly to Dallas, and then we have Austin, Salt Lake City, Denver, L.A., another New York trip. So just back and forth, and we're all split up. Like my dad, two of my brothers are down in Houston now. My brother Jesse and I fly to New York today, so we're going to be all over the place.
So if this is a success, you know, Peacock, they're going to want to do multiple seasons. Mm-hmm. After experiencing this, would you be up for that, or do you think this is one and done, I'm good now?
I actually enjoyed it, and I enjoyed the first reality show and this one even more. I think it's a good, you know, we may not be the best representations all the time, but I love being able to put the spotlight on our ag industry because it's so unknown for those, especially on the East and West Coast. They just don't know what happens out here in rural America. So if we could put the spotlight on that, and yeah, there's going to be a little bit of drama and a little bit of some scenes that we may regret. But overall, I think it's a good exposure opportunity for our industry.
And it's kind of like, I mean, like, so they made the comparison to Yellowstone. Mm-hmm. Like, how many people became fascinated with that way of life just watching Yellowstone? Mm-hmm. And not the train station and all the scenes with Beth and Rip, which you love, but just the idea of it, right?
Yeah.
And the romanticism of it and just how beautiful everything is. Now, that's where I want a vacation, right? Mm-hmm. And so if there's that response, I mean, things could really blow up even bigger for you guys, right?
They could blow up. Country's in right now. Beyonce's got the number one song on country radio. Like, you see everyone at the Oscars. Like, everyone's wearing cowboy hats now. It's become this really, you know.
Cowboy chic is a look, and I understand. I was told one time.
Yeah. I've been wearing Carhartt since I could walk. Right. And it just now is coming into the fashion scene, and for once I was ahead on a fashion trend.
There you go.
Finally.
What's your ruling on the Beyonce country song?
I love it. Yeah, I play that thing nonstop.
That's right.
He gets it. He knows. And we like it, too. See, there's nothing wrong with it. And so then, knowing our love of Yellowstone, and it looks like we're going to love this show, too, what would we have to do to get Jake and I an invite up to the farm?
You guys come up anytime you want. We'll throw a good old time. I'll have my brother Cole there, and we can guarantee there'll be a party happening.
This guy could be a useful hand up there, couldn't you? You could do something. I mean, right?
We'll
put you on a horse. Yeah, put you on a horse.
Right, and then here's the guy. He can actually come in and
I've got work experience.
Do you have any openings? What would you put in? Like, if he shows up, right, mm-hmm. and he just says, "I'm traveling through. I'm a hired hand." What would you, by the looks of him, mm-hmm. what would you put him to work at doing?
I think you would be an excellent cattle chute operator. So doing the castrations and the metal injection.
That's exactly right.
That's exactly what I was asked to do. My first job there is in Ark City.
It was
unsettling for a young 12-year-old kid that got thrown into that operation.
Your hands are full with all this right now, but later when things slow down, my God, is there any way we could just make that happen?
Absolutely.
We could do a whole presentation of this.
We had a cow that had like a growth hormone deficiency, so it wasn't gonna fetch a good price. Mm-hmm. So we had it in a pen behind the farm in Ark City. And my sister and I would go feed the cow every once in a while, and it kind of became like a pet, you know. And my stepdad warned us. He said, don't give it a name, because if you give it a name, you're going to get attached to
it. Did you give it a name?
My sister named it Too Short, because we were hip-hop fans.
And then what happened?
And, well, Too Short became dinner.
Yep. Yeah, there it is. Nice little barbecue.
Right. And my sister became a vegetarian for the next 5 years, but, you know, she's gotten over it.
All right.
It's a circle of life.
Before we wrap things up, Stephen McBee, thanks so much for coming in the studio. For people that see the trailer, that are deciding, should I watch, should I tell people what they can expect and why they should watch the McBee Dynasty, Real American Cowboys on Peacock.
Yeah, the drama's cranked up to 10, and the stresses and pressures on this show are 100% real. There's not one single thing that's faked on it, so I can promise you, because I'm living the life, this reality show is as real as it can get and as exciting as it can get.
What if people want to get their car washed in Kansas City? Where should they go?
Hey, we've got multiple locations across the city. McBee's Coffee and Car Wash. We're opening up more, but swing on in. Check us out. I'll be there. I'm usually at the locations once or twice a week. So come in and say hey.
And it's an actual car wash. It's like the train station. Like, hey, I'm going to take you to the car wash. And
then, no, this is a legit car wash.
But that's all right.
So you drop your car, you go inside, have a cup of coffee. You're done with your coffee. You come out, your car's nice.
You actually don't even have to leave your car. So it's a drive-through coffee shop and car wash. Dude, and then we've even got a dog wash there on site at each one.
You know, Danny Klink's.
Oh, boy. I don't know. That would be interesting.
I was gonna say nobody loves car washes and coffee more than me, but I don't know if that's true.
A dog wash too?
Oh yeah,
it's quick and easy. Your car gets a thorough hand job.
I don't know if that happens at the car wash, but that would be. I can tell you that
that's a little extra there.
Right, you gotta pay extra for that.
People lined up around the block. Where are you going? I'm going to the car wash again, honey. Leave me alone. All right, you know what? I can't wait to watch this. And should we? Should we binge it, or should we try to give us a couple of days? Because it's difficult. What would you say?
I would say binging it's going to be the way to go. If you watch one episode, you're going to be hooked, and you're going to have to keep up with the drama.
All right. And so we're going to be rooting. We got to root for you because you're the one that came in studio.
That's right.
You said you listened to us. So we're on Team Stephen for obvious reasons. Right. That's Stephen McBee Jr. Watch the McBee Dynasty, Real American Cowboys. It's streaming now on Peacock. And maybe can we have you in again?
Absolutely. Yeah, I'll come in anytime you guys will have me.
Thank you so much for coming. We appreciate it. We'll be back after this on WHB.